Hey, everybody. Welcome to Sweater Weather, a podcast about Canadian arts and culture. I am Aaron Giovannone, a writer and professor in Calgary, Alberta.
I'm Naomi Lewis, a writer, editor, and creative writing teacher here in Calgary as well.
So it's been a little while since our last episode of Sweater Weather. We have a kind of a new setup. We're doing something like in studio. We have new equipment, new cameras, new microphones, just kind of a new vibe to the show. And I hope you like it. Naomi, what comes to your mind when you hear the word Degrassi?
What comes to mind is being a teenager, a young kid, actually, a little bit younger, probably the perfect age to watch the show, actually, because I was a couple of years younger than the characters, which is always ideal for anything aimed at young people. And growing up in Ottawa, I watched that show. I got to see what maybe was in store for me in a couple of years, along with how cool it was to live in Toronto instead of Ottawa.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We should be clear to everybody that we're, depending on the age of our audience, you, when you hear Degrassi, you're thinking maybe the Degrassi, the next generation, the later iteration. We're talking original Degrassi, OG Degrassi, this show that ran from, I believe, 1987 to 1991. I think the final special, TV special, was 1992. So, you know, when I think of Degrassi, the first thing that comes to mind is the unforgettable theme song.
Yeah, of course.
Wake up in the morning,
feeling shy and lonely. Gee, I gotta go to school, etc.
etc.
I also think of actually the thing that really stood out to me was, so what year was it when the episode aired where Spike got pregnant? Because that was like,
I think it was the first season.
Yeah, so that was 1987.
I believe so.
So that means I would have been 11, and the character was 14. Mm-hmm. So, like, when you're 11, 14-year-olds seem quite a bit older and, like, exotic.
Yes.
And it was just completely, like, mind-boggling that this 14-year-old character was pregnant on TV. Like, I just remember being so, like, it preoccupying me, this plotline.
Really?
Yes.
Famous plotline. That's one of the more famous plotlines, 14-year-old Spike getting pregnant,
yes,
having the baby. Shane is the baby daddy.
Yes.
Shane has his own terrifying plot line. Maybe we'll get to that later. You know, for the main characters from, I guess it depends. Well, it depends on who you like identify with and stuff. For me, it was like Joey, Snake, and Wheels, the Zit Remedy band members.
So that's who you thought of as the main characters.
Yeah, I mean, that's
interesting.
It is. I think it's very obviously it's like gender.
Yeah, because I thought of Spike as the main character, really.
She's in there a lot, especially in this first couple of seasons with the baby and stuff.
For sure.
Yeah, I identified with Joey Jeremiah. He's fun. He's puckish. He's got his fedora and his like floral shirts. He's played by Italian Canadian actor Pat Mastriani. The best Italian-Canadian actor, as far as I know. The only one that I can think of off the top of my head. And also, he does a great job. So he's a lot of fun to watch. And another thing, the first memory I have of Degrassi being like the plot lines that are just kind of shocking and burned into your young brain was the scene where Wheels goes hitchhiking. He goes to find his bio father in a far-flung town, Port Hope, and along the way he gets in trouble while hitchhiking.
Sure.
I remember it being a very scary scene. I don't think, maybe it's not nice to talk about it right off the top, but there's like a lot of like plot lines in the show that are just like that. You're like, oh, that's like so sad to talk about or whatever. And that was the vibe of Degrassi. And I have to say, like, for as much as I appreciate the show now after we've rewatched it recently, and I recognize, I think as an adult, in a lot of ways, I kind of like it a little bit more in some ways, because at the time, I feel like I was too, I was kind of scared by the show. I found it off-putting with how brutal some of the things that happened to the kids are. And for as realistic as that may be, you know, for somebody raised on Hollywood, shiny, happy, fair. Mm-hmm. You know, like 90210, Degrassi's essentially competitor for teen drama, that kind of stylized and teen life, and presented maybe like aspirational version of what teen life would be if you're good looking and rich and everything, and of course the bright palette of everything made in Hollywood.
And it like has more of a soap opera aesthetic where everyone's very polished, and things do go very wrong, but the kinds of things that go wrong are not really the kinds of things that go wrong in real life, so it doesn't feel as urgent and as scary, because you're not like, oh no, what if I get in? I don't even remember what the bad things are. Like, what if I am trapped in a fire in a mansion? Or like, what if I, whatever. So, and when they do go wrong, you know it's going to turn out okay in the end. Yeah. Whereas on Degrassi,
what if my boyfriend leaves me to star in a Hollywood movie to become a famous actor? Darn.
What if my like 35-year-old boyfriend is still in high school?
Other thing that was different about 90210 and Degrassi is Degrassi kids were real kids. They were about the age that they were portraying, mm-hmm. while the 90210 actors are like at least 10, 15 years old.
Yeah, at least.
They're like in their mid-20s. Luke Perry must have been 30 years old playing an 18-year-old mm-hmm. or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Watching Degrassi was a lot of fun. We rewatched it recently together. And it kind of inspired me to like find out more about the show and how this famous, groundbreaking, and very influential show like got made. How did that happen? So did you know that the kind of the person behind the Degrassi franchise was originally an art teacher?
Really?
Yes. Her name is Linda Schuyler.
Okay.
And in the early 1970s, she was teaching at a junior high school in the East End of Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in the 70s. We're going back. We're going back now. This is the early 70s. Now, with a $3,000 grant from the Toronto District School Board, like with her students, she did a documentary film that was about immigrant students in Toronto.
Okay.
And it went well. It was like good enough to be featured on American primetime news.
So she made it with her students in the sense that they were the actors in it?
It was like an educational project to
and
like
how
make
old
a
were
film
her
together.
Students?
She was a junior high teacher. Okay. Yeah. So it went really well, and said it was shown on TV and stuff, American TV. So this encouraged her to continue to make other films. She got the bug for filmmaking and television making. So her next attempted project, I think it was about a kid's summer camp. It was supposed to be a documentary. It was a lot more complicated, and so she sought professional filmmaker help. And this is where she met up with a guy named Kit Hood.
Mm.
That's a name that you see all over Degrassi credits, right? So he was like a bearded and bespectacled freelance film editor in Toronto. Like he worked on commercials and stuff like that. So basically the film...
She liked him for the beard and the spectacles?
Well, I'll show you a picture.
All right.
I'll show you a picture of them both when they're young. That film they were working on originally was never completed, but the two fell in love. Now, yes, they fell in love while working on that project.
Okay.
Kit Hood was already married to someone else, but soon enough, Linda and Kit were living together in an apartment in East End, Toronto, and they had started their own film production company called Playing With Time. Want to see these pictures?
Sure.
Let's look at them. So that's a young Linda Schuyler. She's looking very 80s. This is her on the set of Degrassi
Junior
High.
Big curly perm, big glasses. Yeah.
Nice white teeth. She seems
big
like
white
a,
teeth.
She looks like a television producer plus teacher. She looks like both of them together.
Yeah, she looks very wholesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And
I think right there she's with the actor who plays BLT.
That's right. Yes. Yeah, that's like from the late 80s, that picture, I believe. There she is with Kit Hood, Caitlin, mm-hmm, receiving, I guess, a Gemini Award for Best Television Show.
She looks even more 80s chic here with her hair up. Big curly bangs in front. And Kit Hood's looking pretty cute there with his bow tie. And he does have a beard and spectacles. And then there's Caitlin, the beloved Caitlin of Degrassi Junior High.
Right.
Yeah.
They started that production company in 1977.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Playing With Time Productions, and it was in their apartment, like I said. Now, they wanted to make documentaries. But you guess what? There's not a huge market for documentaries.
Right.
At least at this time. I said, well, yeah, kind of these days, there's so many documentaries on Netflix and stuff. At that time, they couldn't find like a distributor for my first film they did together. It was about a 72-year-old marathon pianist.
What's a marathon pianist?
Yeah, I guess you'd have to watch the movie to see. It's about a guy named, his name was Jimmy, and he would, 72 years old, and I guess he'd be in these competitions to see how long he could play the piano for. It is like quirky yeah. and funny. Distributors were not super interested in projects like this, I guess. I think that one got distributed, but other ones did not. Now, they stumbled on a kid's book.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Ida Makes a Movie, and it's by a children's author named K. Chiraro. I don't know how to say it. Chiraro? A well-known American writer. Now, Linda and Kit thought this book would be perfect for a film adaptation because it's about...
making a movie.
It's about a young girl and her friends who make a film together, right? So it would work really well as a television short. So they do get money to do so. They get, I guess from the CBC, they get $20,000 to fund their short film. They shot the film using a cast of children from their neighborhood, just where they lived. The kids were all in the 8 to 10-year-old range. And the action was set on nearby Degrassi Street, which was near Kit and Linda's home.
Uh-huh.
So this is where Degrassi, the name, comes into it. Now, if you want to know, I never even thought about this, but Degrassi is like an Italian name. And I always I did kind of wonder, oh, yeah, like it's a street, whatever. Anyway, Degrassi, the guy, it was named after...
who is Degrassi?
His name was Captain Filippo Degrassi.
Okay.
He was an Italian-born soldier who emigrated to Canada, lived in what was then called York, like in 1831.
Okay.
And he later became a member of the ruling class, basically. He was a member of what was called the Family Compact, which was like the ruling elite in Upper Canada at the time.
Okay.
So anyway, he gets a city named after, a street named after him, and eventually a show named after him.
Several shows
named after him.
A junior high
and a high.
Yeah.
Eventually, all named after him, and it was all fake.
Can you imagine what he would have thought if he'd known that would be his legacy?
Yeah, that's right.
Captain Degrassi.
So Ida Makes a Movie. It airs on CBC in 1979. It's well received, and the CBC wants more. We actually watched it together.
We did.
What are you? Any memories of that? It's on YouTube. People can watch it. Recommend it. It's fun.
It's very cute.
Yeah. Very cute. Yeah.
Little girl wants to enter a movie making contest, and things work out, but not as expected.
That's right. There's some twists and turns along the way. Now, in Ida Makes a Movie, I don't think I recognized any of the kid actors who would eventually be.
I didn't recognize
in junior high, mm-hmm. but. What ends up happening is that, you know, they start making more these film shorts. The CBC commissioned 6 more episodes for what would become the television anthology series called The Kids of Degrassi Street. So it's an anthology series, meaning that there's not a through line through the episodes, and sometimes it features different characters who don't even know each other, aren't really related to each other. That's the nature of how they were being aired, because they were only being, because in the first year, only one episode was aired. And I believe, you know, in, that was 1979. In 1980, only one more was aired. In 1981, they aired 4 episodes.
Oh, I do remember seeing one of those on TV,
yeah.
Like in the 80s. And if I recall correctly, the actress that plays Caitlin was in it, but her name wasn't Caitlin.
And I know, it was confusing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was Lisa, right?
Her name was Lisa. Well, good memory. I don't recall that at all. I remember seeing after I was into Degrassi Junior High, this previous series, Kids of Degrassi, was still on TV. I remember seeing an episode with Arthur in it. The actor who plays Arthur, his name's Duncan Waugh.
Mm-hmm.
He's unmistakable, big red hair. He's big. And I remember seeing him and thinking, who's this? I mean, that's Arthur, but why is Arthur acting so weird? Like, he's not Arthur. And it was just like my little kid brain couldn't wrap around it. And I found it rather alienating to see the same kid playing a different role.
Yeah, that's scary.
It was scary. I was like, that's not, because you're trying to, as a kid, I think you're connecting the actor very directly to
And
the
way that Degrassi Junior High was made is it felt so real that like you almost thought it was real.
That's right.
Like, the kids didn't seem like they were acting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of them couldn't act very well.
No, goodness, no.
And that's part of the appeal. Yeah. I mean, I have more to say about that a little bit later. But yeah, so like The Kids of Degrassi Street airs sporadically at first, but then by the time we get to 1985, the show's like doing really well. And so they're commissioned to do a full schedule of 12 episodes produced and aired in 1985.
Degrassi, Kids of Degrassi.
Of Kids of Degrassi. Mm-hmm. And you have other actors from who would appear later on in Degrassi Junior High. You mentioned Caitlin, what's her name? Stacey Mistin. And also Wheels, the character who would play Wheels. His name is Neil Hope, that actor. He's also in Kids of Degrassi Street. Now,
I think Lucy was also in there.
Oh, Lucy was in there too. Mm-hmm. I think Yik was in it too.
Oh, wow.
I think so, if I remember correctly. So in 1986, The Kids of Degrassi Street was like won an Emmy Award. It won an International Emmy Award for kids programming, and it won the Prix Jeunesse for children's programming, which is a very prestigious European award for like children's content, basically. Mm. So it was like the talk of the town because it had won all these awards and stuff. So that means. And this is, I have a nice quote here from a TV producer, Angela Bruce, who would work with the Degrassi team for a time. She remarked in 1988 for Shadowlane's article, she said that Hood and Skyler, they had, quote, a technique right from the start for working with children, great freshness and a genuine touch and respect. And so that is, I think, what's really novel about the show is how the kids are portrayed.
Right.
Yeah. They do come across as like genuine, and the word fresh, I think, is a good description too, because especially in the early seasons, like, you know, these are little kids, they're not professionally trained the way that you might expect. I don't know, there's a lot of kid actors out there these days. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of money to be made. And I think this is an era, at least in Canada, where that wasn't happening so much. And so you got kids who are just not trained actors, and they're up there just doing their best, and it's like kind of cute to watch them do
it
that.
Definitely is cute. Yeah.
You know, you're like, aw, that's like, you know,
there's kids like being kids. Yeah.
Kids being kids. You know, and one of the things they're doing is acting for you. And it's like,
yeah. And it has. They're doing their best.
Yeah. And so what you're doing is like you're seeing. That's why it seems so real too. Is because you're not just seeing the character they're trying to portray, and you're not just hearing the lines they're reading as you would with professional actors, but you kind of see through it to the what you think of as the real kid that's there who's trying.
You can't help but think that. Yeah, true.
With all these new high profile honors, Skyler and Hood, you know, they basically can get whatever they ask for now to do their next show. And so they want to, so they secure funding for the next project. This one would feature older kids who are in junior high. That's the age that Linda taught. So that's kind of the kids she's most comfortable with and interested in working with anyway. So for the first season of Degrassi Junior High, Playing With Time Productions secured $2.6 million combined from CBC, PBS, the American Network, and Telefilm Canada.
Very nice.
Yeah. So they
how much could they actually do with that? I don't really have a good sense of that.
Yeah. Well, it's considered still like a small budget. Degrassi was always considered a low-budget show, working with a shoestring budget. The show retained 7 cast members from the Kids of Degrassi Street. I mentioned some of them. But they would need a lot more child actors because they just there's a bigger cast now. And there just weren't that many professional kid actors in Toronto. So they did like a... they passed out flyers to Toronto schools and asked the principals to make announcements like on the PA.
Wow.
Like to suggest that kids come out and try out. So Pat Mastroianni, who would become Joey, he was a new addition for Degrassi Junior High. That's how he heard about it. He heard about it in an announcement in his high school, his grade 9 homeroom. The CBC was looking for actors for a new show.
That's interesting. Yeah. So it was really, they announced it to the kids, not the parents.
Yeah. I guess I'm not sure if they talked to parents too, but they went. They did go to the schools. You see how from the beginning, Degrassi is an educational endeavor. It's kind of a theme that runs through. I'm not sure how much that sticks with like the next iterations of Degrassi, but this first one was like Degrassi's about like it's an educational experience.
Totally.
Even for the actors. Yeah, so that's why you can sell it. And she's a teacher, so she knows that milieu, the educational milieu, and she knows how to like talk about it as this is training for maybe a career in the arts or whatever. Right. So
Right.
So about 500 kids showed up for auditions, and it was kind of like I guess it was kind of like a boot camp they ran. It was kind of like elimination style, like this, you wouldn't come back the next day if you didn't do well that day or whatever. So it was pretty cutthroat. And kids were eliminated, you know, bit by bit. I guess it was a close call in the auditions. Bill Parrott is the actor who played Shane. Mm-hmm. Apparently everyone thought he was going to be Joey Jeremiah.
Really?
Because Joey Jeremiah was considered sort of one of the protagonists or whatever. And sure. Shane not as big of a role. But in the end, Pat Mastroianni got it. Filming for the show began in the summer of 1986. It was shot in a real school. Mm-hmm. And I remember that. I remember just like that school, the look of it, mm-hmm. so clearly. And it did just look like a Canadian school.
Yeah, it's school. Clearly a school.
It's like a Canadian school. It looks a lot like the school you'd go to.
Definitely.
It was called Vincent Massey Public School. And it was in Etobicoke. It's now called Daisy Avenue Public School. So
kids go there.
Kids go there still.
Cool.
Yeah.
That'd be a real claim to fame.
Yeah. I think there's a bench outside of the school or a statue commemorating the show.
Very cool.
Something like that. Yeah. Now you asked about the budget. Everything was done on a tight budget. $2.3 million is, I guess, not a lot of money to produce a season of TV. So shooting on location, it was cheaper than a studio, using a studio. I'm not even sure what kind of studios are available in Toronto at the time. There was limited wardrobe budget. So the kids wear their own clothes. They're basically wearing their own clothes.
That is quite clear.
You have any comments on like on the wardrobe? The kids wear funny stuff, don't they?
I mean, they wear what kids wear, which is awesome. Like that's just another hint that makes you feel like this is real life. Like the costumes are not polished, and sometimes they're not the best choices from like a fashion perspective, or like they're not that flattering or whatever.
Can you think of some examples?
Well, I don't want to be mean, but there's
well, I'm wearing like a floral and I'm wearing shorts, which I think show on camera. So
So Spike, who for whatever reason was my favorite character always, like she has very punky look.
Yeah.
And
cool hair, famous hair, the big
very like, famous yeah. hair. I noticed this time through that she sometimes she likes to wear very baggy sort of clothes, and sometimes they're
the
like
90s
very are bad for her body shape. Like they look make her and maybe
they make her
camera
look very short.
They make her look almost like a very strange shape that I don't think she really is. And it might be the clothes and the camera angle combined that make her look like somehow like her body just looks out of proportion or something like that. And I just feel like on a different kind of show, like on 90210 or whatever, like they're obviously dressing the actors for like optimum
coolness
and also flattering.
Yes.
Optimum flatteringness.
Yes. Yeah.
Flattery.
Whatever. They're going to dress them according to their character type. But whatever that type is, whether it's outlaw Dylan or like studious Andrea, they're going to dress them in things that look good.
Yeah. Ultimately. And also like their hair is going to be like very perfect. Like a character that really stood out to me was Melanie.
Yeah.
When I remember like as a kid almost feeling like upset when Melanie would come on film, because Melanie reminded me like very disturbingly of myself in that she was like both like somehow both a nerd and an airhead at the same time, which was like what I
how you imagined yourself,
how I imagined myself accurately.
Yeah. Melanie is perfectly nice character.
No, I know, but at the time like she is like a silly girl, like that is her character.
Yeah, we're gonna get into it actually.
And her like she always has, and it's not just her manner, but in fact like her appearance that reminded me of myself in this way, that like her hair looked, I mean as the show went on she looked more kind of put together, but in the first season she's 12 and she has like braces and she has this like bob haircut where the hair is like a bit like a triangle. And that's the haircut I had.
Okay.
Where it was always like flopping in my eye and it was a triangle. And it was like really thick, so it kind of stood out like in this kind of pyramid shape.
Yeah, I remember that.
And yeah, Melanie was like soup, but she, like, I feel like that actor too was acting maybe like a bit more than the other ones, because when I've seen her in interviews, she's not acting like Melanie. And okay. She doesn't even talk like Melanie, actually. Like, they have different voices.
Okay.
But,
her name's Sarah Ballingall?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, that character really stood out to me in her, like, very apparent dorkiness.
Right.
And I feel like that was something that she brought to the show by just looking, like, partly just by looking like herself.
Like a kid.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember Lucy, like, wearing a shirt that says Lucy on it.
Yeah. Oh, Lucy was the coolest, though.
Do you remember the episode where it's Arthur and his dad have a tiff over Arthur's dad's new girlfriend?
Yeah.
And, you know, Arthur's mad that his dad isn't taking him to Joe's joke emporium.
Yeah.
Which is like I guess it's just, I don't know what this would be.
It's like their bonding time that they go by, like,
silly gags.
Like whoopee cushions. And
that,
stuff.
That Arthur would, like, slip in on under his dad's seat or whatever. Yeah. Anyway, Arthur in that episode, and I think two more episodes later that season, is wearing a sweater that has a graphic of what I can only describe as a crazy frog. It's like a frog with its, like, tongue hanging out. And it says Joe's Joke Emporium.
Oh, yeah. Oh, perfect. So that was actually a costume.
That was
for the
a costume choice. Yeah. I feel like a lot of kids are wearing shirts with their names on them. Like, BLT does that too.
Right. Well, it's the name of their character. So that shirt must have been made for the show.
I guess so. Yeah. I guess in those cases, that was some wardrobe budget being spent. I'm not sure. One of the other places that they saved a lot of money was on labor costs. It's always like a really big part of any budget, right? So these are kids. They're not professionals. So what ends up happening is everybody who acts on the show, they're part of a repertory company. They're all employees of this company. It's like Playing with Time's repertory company. They're all contract employees. And they can essentially be asked to do whatever on set. So it's very, this is not, these are not unionized actors. So
what do you mean, whatever they can be?
Well, so in a typical unionized contract, you know, where they're professional actors, collectively bargaining essentially for not just pay, but for working conditions and things like residuals and royalties, basically back end benefits that come if a show is successful, it is sold on a lot of markets and sees a lot of profit. There's often in a union negotiated contract, some of that goes back to the actors, right? Mm-hmm. So none of that is happening with Degrassi Junior High. And what's another thing that a professional actor, for example, you may notice, like in a show, that you never see them in the background of a shot. They're never like, they're always, if they have a speaking role, they're on screen,
mm-hmm.
right? And they're talking to each other.
And even if it's the back of their head, it's probably a double.
Yeah. That's right. Because why? That's because there are strict kind of stipulations about how much time you spend on set.
Right.
And
okay.
doing what, right?
Right.
So the Degrassi actors, they can be asked to be extras. So they're in the background of all of the shots. So if you see kids sitting at desks in mm-hmm. the classroom, it's the main actors, it's the main characters.
Yeah,
they're also
true.
Sitting there. They're passing behind people in the hallway. At least for a time as well, the kids could be asked to basically work as grips. So
really?
like, move equipment and stuff.
What?
And so it's more like these are not being treated as professional actors, but they're being treated as kids.
Like, it's
kids
like being in the drama program at school, or going to drama camp or something like that. Yeah,
much closer to that.
Yeah.
Where it's like,
and how much were they paid?
I don't know the exact amounts, but everybody complained.
Okay.
So,
and like, how much were they on set, actually? Because they still went to school, right?
Yeah, I think they tried to film mostly during the summer.
Oh, okay.
But they were also filming and working during the school year.
Okay.
And so they brought their homework to set and were often trying to do homework.
Wow.
You know, like behind the scenes or whatever.
So I would imagine that as a kid working on that show, it would kind of feel like, if you were a theater, like, drama type kid, it would feel like this awesome experience.
That's
like, I think a lot of kids would be even willing to do that for free.
Yeah. Because it's, if it's akin to what you do for school.
Yeah, like I remember the drama kids at my school, like always being in the drama room and like.
Oh yeah, all night, like on the weekends.
And like working on the play.
Preparing
or
for the theater.
Yeah, totally.
Production. Yeah. That's why I never volunteered. It's like, it's too much, man.
It's funny because like when we were talking about the whole process of auditioning and the culture of being in Degrassi, like I'm thinking about what, like I totally wouldn't have auditioned because I was super shy. Mm-hmm. But like I feel like if I was like me, like my adult personality, I would have totally wanted to be in it. But as a kid, it was like my worst nightmare. Would you have auditioned to be in Degrassi?
I did not. I had, in high school, I had friends who were
theater people.
The theater kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even friends who've gone on to, like, one friend in particular who works in theater now.
Yeah.
And so he was very active in the theater program, and all my other friends were. And I'd hang out with them. I'd go, maybe they'd meet up after they were working on the production or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't do it. I was too. I just couldn't.
You didn't want to do all
that
work.
I just felt like I didn't want to do all this extra work.
Yeah.
And I wasn't super into theater. I had other creative
But you also have outlets. To be really extroverted to want to do that, yeah. I think, because yeah. you have to, like, basically want to be part of, like, a group that's always together, and you're always sort of having this communal experience.
Camaraderie.
And also, yeah, you're just kind of, constantly, engaging, like, in this kind of intimate, artistic, creative way with your peers that probably neither of us was really into at that time.
I don't know. Just for high school, I felt like, I just was not ready for doing something like that.
Yeah.
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 I mean, I wouldn't act in community theater now either.
Oh, yeah, no.
I mean, but here we are on camera doing stuff, so.
Oh, well, that's true.
So you're asking about pay and stuff. Okay, so... in a 2017 Comic-Con convention talk, Stefan Brogren, he played Snake, Stacey Mitzen, who's Caitlin, and Pat Mastriani, mm-hmm. they mentioned that they would actually, it was a game of theirs, to hide so that they wouldn't be drafted to do extra duties.
Like, oh my God. Extras.
So they would, like, hide on set, find corners, and run away and
stuff.
Well,
it really was like camp or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, pay wasn't great compared to industry standards. I don't have numbers, but I have quotes. So Stacey Mitzen in that talk mentioned that, quote, I was pretty much broke because I was doing Degrassi. Now, this is compared to, I think in the context, she's talking about what she knew other actors were being mm-hmm. paid in Hollywood, because she would move to Hollywood for a while and try to work in the industry there. Now, in 1989, there was a CBC special. A documentary special about Degrassi and its success. It's, and Peter Zowski narrates mm-hmm. it, and he says this. He says, star is a four-letter word around Degrassi.
Mm.
So because it was an ensemble cast, there's tons of kids, right? No one actor was really indispensable, as you'd say, with a star, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, Nikki Kemeny, she, in season one, has a very prominent role. She's the actress who plays Vula.
Oh, Vula.
Vula, the lovely little Greek girl or whatever.
Yeah.
She's kind of the nerdy Greek girl. Dad won't let her go out.
She was always the foil to, like, the kid that was acting badly.
Right, Stephanie Kay.
But also Lucy when she shoplifted.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
So she's in a ton of those episodes.
Yeah.
And they liked her, but she did not, but that actress did not return for season two. And that was over a dispute, a pay dispute.
Oh, really?
She had an agent who told her she could get paid more.
Okay.
And they just kicked her off the show.
Ouch.
Yeah, and something similar happened to Nicole Stoffman, who did play Stephanie Kay. She is a central character, main character.
Yeah, she was the main character in the first season.
In the first season.
She was, explicitly the main character.
She's around for a couple more, but by the time the fourth season, when it turns into Degrassi High,
mm-hmm.
she leaves the show.
Right.
And she gets another offer to work on a different television show. It did not last. It only lasted a few episodes.
Bummer.
I should have written down the name of it. I think it's a very silly production, but it was like she was being paid like a normal actress, I think, for that show. So she left a very solid, successful show for a lesser show because the pay was supposed to be better, right? So that's kind of what's going on behind the scenes with the pay here. And Stacey Mitzen, again, who played Caitlin, she said, quote, they made it clear that we were all disposable.
Wow. That's intense. And also coming from her, because she does start to feel like the main character after a while, like the main girl character.
Eventually she is the main character.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. A few years down the road. Now, the show debuts in January 1987. It aired Monday nights. I remember watching it Monday nights. I think it aired on the Monday nights from the beginning in Canada. I think in the U.S. it aired Saturday nights. Mm-hmm. It was an immediate hit. So by 1988, it was the highest rated drama in Canada. In the U.K., it peaked at 6 million viewers per episode.
Mm.
Yeah. The public discourse about the show, why everyone was so enraptured with it, was that it was so real.
Yeah.
It dealt with realistic issues that teens would have to deal with, like mm-hmm. pregnancy, drugs, sex, topics that wouldn't
divorce,
topics that wouldn't otherwise be discussed.
Culture on clash, TV. Like with the Vula thing.
That's right. Yeah, Vula is her parents are Greek immigrants,
yeah.
And so they have these other. Like, they were quite strict with her because they're from a small
village. That was
village.
A big deal, like just as something that I really related to at my high school in yeah. Ottawa. It was, like, there were a lot of kids whose parents were recent immigrants.
Yeah.
And that, like, culture clash between a kid's, like, school life and home life.
Yeah.
And how their friends, like, didn't really understand why they couldn't do certain things, and they would kind of, like, act one way with their friends and another way at home, like maybe even speaking in a different language. Yeah. That was like a very common experience among my friends and when I was that age. Like it was very like interesting. It's very Canadian.
Yes.
And it's very real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I guess you'd say it's the first teen drama.
Is it the first one?
Well, what it's doing is, mm-hmm. from my perspective, is it's melding an existing genre, which was the after-school special, right?
Yeah.
Which is like, we're going to teach you a very important lesson about mm-hmm. not, like, don't get in a car with strangers or whatever.
Or don't take drugs, you'll jump out the window.
Right, right. So it's, yeah. Exactly. But it's melding that kind of educational kids show with what is a more standard just melodrama, right? Which is like whatever, like Dallas, like, you know, it's just like, oh, what are the romantic intrigues or the personal
totally.
Disputes and stuff. And it's going on at night
mm-hmm.
when dramas would be on, like adult dramas would be on. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's one way of thinking about it, is it just kind of brings to a kid's show a more kind of adult. I think it's doing that with like a kid's genre and an adult genre, and it's mashing them together.
I mean, another thing it's doing that back to school specials obviously can't is that it develops the characters over a long time.
Yep.
So you get to know, you start to feel like you know these people and yeah. you want to know what's going to happen to them. And then
yeah.
they, you know, like this, and then there's like the little romantic intrigues, like this person likes this person and they want to go to dance with
yeah.
him, but he wants to go to the dance with her.
Yeah.
So there's those kind of...
Yeah, Snake, who wants to go to the dance with
Michelle,
but then...
Spike wants to go with him.
But Spike wants to go with Snake.
Yeah. So, I mean, even these little kind of like mini romances, kid-style romances
yeah.
are like... I mean, it's a soap opera kind of format. It's also like... the plot of every novel ever written and like yeah. every story ever written, but yeah
but I'm not sure they were treating kids issues like with that in that particular way, using that form of storytelling always
before.
So I think that's one of its major things. I mentioned
interesting. I'm curious about this, like,
yeah,
because I know you can edit this out, but
sure, no, go ahead.
Like, I know that kids' books were doing that for a long time.
Yeah.
And so, in a way, like, there were always, not always, but there were long, there's a long time tradition of books with characters that age going through those kinds of situations.
Yeah.
Maybe not quite as gritty, but, like, a long-form story, right?
Yeah.
And so, in a way, they're also bringing, like, the novelistic mm-hmm. storytelling that familiar from children's books onto the TV.
Right.
And setting it in, like, an extremely contemporary.
Yeah.
Setting.
Yeah. I mean, the formula caught on immediately.
Yeah.
And so we mentioned 90210. Aaron Spelling, the producer of 90210, he tried to buy the rights to Degrassi. He wanted to make an American Degrassi.
Okay.
They wouldn't sell it to him.
Okay.
So he started 90210 instead. But you could see how different the vibe of 90210
is.
So different, right? But I think one of the things to keep in mind too with Degrassi, you can say, oh, it was like subversive, or because it was doing something new and different.
Mm-hmm.
And Okay, but also it had complete and utter state support. Like, it was funded by the Canadian public arts agencies. It had full support of the schools of these kids. It was Degrassi was considered an educational show. It was part of official France, for example, the Toronto District School Board had Degrassi episodes on as part of their sex education.
So what, I mean, considering like its alleged subversiveness, like was there any moral outcry against it?
Yeah, I mean, liberal parents and liberal institutions, like you kind of have in Canada, they were generally supportive of this because it was educational, and it wasn't that different than the kind of information kids are getting in sex ed already, right? But it's like a kind of a novel format for.
Well, I mean, sex wasn't the only
in
topic,
public schools. Now, I went to Catholic schools, so it was a little bit different, but public schools, they were, you know, like my Catholic school would not have shown us Degrassi.
Right, right.
On TV in the 80s in the early 90s.
Sure.
My Catholic elementary school.
Because those kids were not abstaining necessarily.
That's right. They weren't abstaining. They weren't abstaining.
And one even had an abortion at one point.
That's right. Yeah. You'd have to say generally Degrassi, reflecting, I think, the values of its time, is not sex negative the way that Catholicism is.
Yeah.
But it is very drug negative, and so all the drug plot lines are very tragic for the most, or they're not necessarily really tragic, but they're always bad.
That's interesting, because you saying that, I'm like, well, of course it's drug negative. It's funny how, like, today, it's not until recently that there's shows where kids can just do drugs and it's not a big deal.
Right, but Euphoria, the teen drama of the moment, is not one of them. Now, I'm not even sure who the audience for that is, because it's like HBO.
I've never seen it.
It's about, it's like, you know, it's high school kids.
Yeah.
But drug addiction is a huge issue.
Oh, okay.
It. It's a good show. But from what I've seen, I haven't seen it at all. But
this is a total tangent.
Yeah.
But that you'll not want to keep in. But I recently read a book, like an unpublished manuscript that's under consideration, and it's about teenagers. It's actually by a teenager, but it's about an eating disorder. And like one part of the book that I was kind of like, oh, I kind of love this, is that, and I suppose it's written as a novel, but it's like completely autobiographical. But there's this one part of the book where she and her best friend go off and like get drunk and smoke pot for the first time. And it's like a totally positive, it's like just like a 100% positive experience. And it's like part of her healing that she has this like fun experience and bonding experience with her friend. Like, there's nothing about it that's like, oh, it's so bad that we drank and did drugs. It's like, no, this was like a sign that my life was getting better and that I was like able to chill out and have fun, you know?
Yeah.
And like, there's no negative consequences of it, only positive consequences.
Right.
And it's like, yeah, that's, like,
sometimes
more
true.
Often the case than like, oh no, now I'm a drug addict or whatever, or like I jumped out the window or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, it's just, it is interesting. Degrassi is like drug negative, but I don't think it was even an option at the time.
No, it wasn't. Yeah.
To cast drug use or even drinking as like anything but negative.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, maybe that's changed a little bit. But
it has, for sure. Like, there's lots of shows now, like maybe not kids, but I think you couldn't really have a show that showed drug use as like positive even among adults at that time.
Yeah, I mean, that happens on film. I mean, famously with with things like Cheech and Chong or whatever. But like, there's a lot of comedies in the early 2000s that like just take people being high as kind of the norm or whatever. Like relatively soft drugs and stuff. So
I was just thinking of Frankie and Grace and Frankie. Like Frankie is always high.
Okay.
And Grace is always drunk.
Okay.
And like occasionally they allude to the fact that she's an alcoholic, but she's like, I have no intention of doing anything about it. And it's just kind of like, okay, well, I accept.
Well, she's perfectly functional and healthy. Right. So.
And like Frankie smokes a lot of pot, but there's never a mention that there's anything wrong with it. Like it's just something that she likes to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's not cast as an addict.
Right.
Grace is, but she's also like, yeah, but I don't want to do anything about it. And it's just like, okay, fine.
You might say that's not realistic, but
that she's fine even though she's an alcoholic,
or that she's high all the time necessarily, or drunk all the time. Yeah, like maybe you're not.
Well, she's one of those, like, there are people who are always drinking and they're not drunk because they just are like,
okay,
that's their what's the word?
Baseline. Like,
their baseline, yeah. And she's basically...
Trailer Park Boys, yes.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you can get away with it in a comedy. Yeah, for sure. So the show's rolling along just fine for 3 seasons. Mm-hmm. Problem is, the kids are growing up. They're not going to be in junior high much longer. I believe there's already some shenanigans to keep some of the older kids in junior high.
Yes.
A year or something, aren't they? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something to do with the new high school is not completed yet or something. Isn't that right?
I think so they have to go to grade 9 at the junior high.
Yeah, so they have to do grade 9 in the junior high. Mm-hmm. So that keeps the older kids there for one extra season.
Yeah.
But they can't, you know, they have to think of another plot device to advance the show and keep the cast together. So what happens at the end of season 3 is during the school dance, famous scene, the school burns down. Thankfully, nobody's hurt.
And then it's like the end of Degrassi Junior High.
That's the end of Degrassi Junior High.
Degrassi High at that point.
That's the end of Degrassi Junior High.
No more Degrassi High because it burned to the ground.
No more Degrassi Junior High.
Oh, Junior. Okay.
It's the end of Degrassi Junior High.
So the Junior High burns to the ground.
The Junior High burns down to the ground. Yeah.
And then they go to high school. Oh, so then they all go to high school.
Then they
right,
it's a plot device to keep them all together.
Right.
All the younger grades. Those actors
who
would...
That's so funny.
Yeah. So they... And it's also kind of enacting a kind of a kid's fantasy of watching...
The school burning down.
Of watching
down.
The school burn
totally,
down.
Totally. Totally.
So everybody is trucked over to the new high school. It's called, and of course, it's called Degrassi High. Some reason there's a Degrassi Junior High and a Degrassi High.
Well, that happens.
I guess on the same street. Or
in my childhood neighborhood, there was like a junior and a high with the same name.
Yeah. Oh, was there?
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. Now, this actually wasn't a high school where they were filming. It was the campus of Centennial College. And it kind of doesn't look like a high school. I mean, it has the lockers
like
and stuff.
It looks like a super big fancy high school.
It looks like a really big fancy high school. Yeah. It's actually not a high school. It's a college. And okay. So I think that it's a nicer space. I think that's like the show partly also starting to like show its success a little bit, trying to like smooth out the rougher edges. Mm-hmm. As I said, they're bringing in a lot of new characters and stuff. I feel like a lot of them are kind of better looking or better actors somewhat. That's what I kind of feel like. They revamp a little bit everything, right? So the theme song is revamped.
That's right.
And honestly, they make it worse. They make the song worse. So you may remember, I don't know if you remember the original. Okay, so this is like the revamped version. It ends like this. Everybody can succeed in yourself. You must believe. Come on, give us a try.
Everybody can succeed in yourself?
You just cut me off.
Sorry.
Wasn't done. At Degrassi High. So it's the same tune, but they changed the lyrics to reflect older students. But look at how bad that rhyme is. Everybody can succeed. What it is an end stop sense-wise, but rhythmically it continues to the next line. In yourself, you must believe, which is a very weird.
In yourself, oh my God.
Yeah, it's contorted. It's like not great, but there's like kind of a pretty iconic final frame of the theme song where they zoom in on what must be Wheels's butt.
That's right.
On this
Wheels's butt.
On his jeans.
Very, very light colored jeans.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Yeah, light blue jeans. So, and I feel like maybe the plots become a little more conventional sitcom-y at times. Like, so I think like maybe they're feeling they have to like spruce things up now that they have more money, a bigger budget. They're also competing with other shows on now, like 90210, and they're thinking, oh, we have to look smoother and stuff.
Yeah, and they're also trying to be more like saucy, like the butt, you know?
Yes, because they're older, right? So
they're more mature.
They're more mature, so maybe you can get away
with it. They're looking
at
each other's butts.
Everything's like a little snazzed up. And it's fine. Show still works. It's great. I do feel like you lose a little bit of that grit and realism that I really like from the first series. And I think like the stories maybe even become a little less working class too. Like you remember in Degrassi Junior High, there's early on there's Rick. He's like the miniature James Dean. character. He's got like cut off jean jacket, and his like
he's
got
poor.
He's poor. Like yeah. his dad, we see his home life. He lives in like a really like cluttered, shitty small apartment.
Yeah.
His dad is clearly stressed and doesn't have enough money. And then he comes home and he's like he's beating him, right?
Yeah.
That's one of the, that's the lesson of that episode is the like get seek help if your parents hit you, and it's all about money. It's like you don't have enough money to give because Joey's visiting Rick. And it's like he gives Rick gives Joey a Coke, and it's like the dad comes home. He's like, "Where's the last Coke?" And he's like, "You can't. You got to get a job if you're gonna be giving your friends
right.
like it's something like that."
Yeah.
So it's about him being poor, and it's like, and even Joey in that season, like this is early. This is like first season to Degrassi Junior High. He's clearly kind of poor too. Like
yeah.
we see his home life. His home life. His mother is on the couch looking tired, wearing like a frock that she cleans houses with. She's like a house cleaner.
Yeah.
And that is totally gone. By Degrassi High, like Rick is gone as a character. Maybe not the best actor. I'm mm-hmm. not sure. Maybe also just they didn't really want that, have a lot of use for that character anymore.
Maybe.
And maybe, who knows what else was going on with the kid actor. But by the time we're in Degrassi High, 3 years later, there's no really explanation, but Joey is just like a nice middle class kid now.
Hmm.
Like we see his house several times. His mom's wearing pearls and nice sweaters, and so it's like she's not working anymore or nothing's explained. It's just assumed that oh she's nice and middle class now.
Yeah,
so that happens a little bit in the
and
show.
Like I remember there being several allusions to people not having a lot of money in junior high, like Melanie at one point steals $20 from her mom.
Yeah,
and that means like they can't afford groceries.
I think that's junior high. Yeah, when
yeah
that
and they like a lot of the kids live in apartments, not yeah. houses, like rental apartments
that's
with
right.
their parents. And
yeah,
then it's true they seem to have more. Somehow have more.
Everything's just middle classed up.
Yeah, yeah.
Somewhat.
Yeah.
And the really big exception, of course, is Wheels.
Mm-hmm.
Wheels, they give.
Downwardly mobile.
They give him a whole other trajectory, right?
Do they ever?
Yeah. So, you know, when we first meet Derek Wheeler, he is safely ensconced in like a loving middle class family.
His parents seem to be professors or like
or some
kind of
they're nerdily intellectual.
Yeah.
They look like smart.
Yeah, they're always playing Scrabble
yeah.
or whatever. Yeah.
That's right. So he's adopted, right? But this is his adopted parents.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course like famous again, one of the famous tragic plot lines of Degrassi is the parents are killed. Both of them like that and by a drunk driver.
Yeah.
And so now this really sets Wheels' life, of course, into precarity and doubt. And what they end up doing with him is making him the downwardly mobile, like, working-class guy. He has a lot of problems, like behavioral problems. He's not going to school anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's skipping class to play video games in the arcade.
Mm-hmm.
He's lying to his grandmother, not obeying her. He's, like, stealing money from Joey's parents.
Right.
For a while, Wheels is like living at Joey's house because his grandmother's kicked him out.
Yeah.
And he's like, that's really shitty. That's a really like terrible thing to do to your friend, right? Steal money. Anyway, so Wheels is shown to be like kind of, he has some redeemable moments, but like where he says sorry and he gives them, pays the money back to Joey's mom. So they're not, they're giving him little bits where it's like something good is, he's doing
mm-hmm.
something good. But for the most part, it's kind of a downward trajectory. And, you know, by the end of the show, Wheels is, he really is like a blue collar guy. Like he's like his one possibility is that maybe he's going to be like an auto mechanic because
mm-hmm.
he's got like a knack for cars. He finds that old beater and fixes it up and gets it started. And he's going to drive it to Calgary where he's going to live with his aunt or something.
Right.
Right? And he's
mm-hmm.
so he really has like a blue collar vibe to him. And I'm not sure anyone else in this show does. Wheels has somewhat of an ignoble ending, but maybe we'll wait until talking about the series finale to mention that.
Save it till the end.
We're going to talk about an episode we both like.
Our favorite episode?
I don't know. It's hard to choose a favorite, but this is an illustrative one, I think. Degrassi High, Season 2, Episode 7. It's called All Nighter. It was broadcast December 17th, 1990. This episode contrasts three different ways that you could pull an all-nighter.
Pull an all-nighter.
Right. So mm-hmm. the first scene of this episode, Luke and Yik are conspiring to hide their joints in the girls' bathroom.
Their marijuana cigarettes.
Their marijuana. Yes. Thank you for defining joint.
Well, a joint could be like a knee joint. It could be like a joint from a chair.
Right. Okay. So they're hiding their their marijuana cigarettes in the girls' washroom in either, I don't remember if it's a condom machine, probably a condom machine. Yeah.
Or a tampon
dispenser.
We're not sure.
Can't remember.
Yeah.
Because, hey, no one will ever find them there. So Kathleen walks into the washroom, sees that Luke was in there.
Yeah.
She's like, pervert. Of course, immediately goes to the condom machine or whatever, and the joints fall out.
Yeah.
And so she's like, looks at them. She goes, drugs.
Yeah, she says drugs.
And that's drugs. And that's like the and that's the cold open of the episode. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So the three storylines are going to be the girls having a night out where they end up smoking marijuana, the boys having like a by accident because they lose their drugs, they don't get to get high, but mm-hmm. they're just gonna have to have a good clean old fashioned fun, playing poker,
and gambling.
Not, gambling never hurt anyone, Naomi.
I know. Drugs are bad. Gambling is good.
Yeah, just don't think about Norm MacDonald. And then there's the most wholesome storyline of all is Alex, who is at home having to complete an essay. He's trying to bang it out in an all-nighter. He's sitting at this like hilariously old-fashioned typewriter.
And isn't he like invited to the poker night and he can't go?
He can't go because he has to finish that essay because the next day he can't work on the essay because he's going fishing with his papa. His papa is yelling at him through the door.
In Greek.
Like, maybe English, maybe Greek. Because the mom also yells at him. Sometimes it's in Greek.
Oh, okay.
The dad's like, I think the dad still speaks English because he's like, you have to wake up in the morning, Alex, at 6 a.m. And he's like, he's like, yes, Papa, yes. And he's like extra pressure to write this essay. He's like eating this big sandwich. He places the sandwich on top of a pile of Cole's notes.
Oh, yeah.
A flashback to homework time mm-hmm, or whatever. Mm-hmm. So those are the three.
I never read a Cole's notes in my life, by the way.
Yeah, it was too obvious. You couldn't really use it for your stuff because, like, your homework, because all the teachers knew what was in Cole's notes, right?
Yeah, so, but I also didn't read it because I wanted to read the books.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, this is, like, help for doing the homework or whatever.
Sure. But I didn't do homework.
Oh, wow. You didn't do homework, but you read all the books.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting character you are. So that's the three plot lines. You know, the star of the show in this episode is like the girls' night out because mm-hmm. it's like by far, it's supposed to be like the example of what not to do.
Yeah.
But it's clearly the most dramatically interesting. So what happens at the girls' sleepover party?
You're asking me?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, as I recall, it's Diana's birthday. Diana, the new Vula, we might call her. She is the Greek girl who strongly resembles Vula.
Basically brought her in to, like, replace Vula.
Yeah. So it's her birthday, and even though she's not allowed out because she has very strict Greek. A very strict Greek brother who seems
to be
her guardian.
Yeah, it's a brother and seems to be in charge. Yeah.
Melanie throws her a sleepover surprise birthday party.
Yeah.
And the other guests at Melanie's are... Oh, and Melanie's mother is home, but she's agreed not to interfere, so right. She never shows up in the room.
Can I just interject quickly here with a quotation? So Diana, it's a surprise party. Yeah. She comes into Melanie's house just talking, thinking that she's going to go to the movies, not have a sleepover. She says, somehow I pictured my 16th birthday a little more romantic than a date with Keanu Reeves. They were going to see what must have been Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Oh, maybe.
Because that was in the theaters
when
they would have been filming.
Well, Keanu Reeves is not the worst date.
I wouldn't say. It's funny though, like that the reference is actually still valid all these years later to Keanu Reeves.
Yeah. Keanu Reeves is still a hunky movie star.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, wasn't like
the other guy in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yeah. Whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think he's a probably a perfectly good actor. Nice guy.
Yeah.
I think he might have been a stand-up comic or, some, or something. Yeah, maybe. Maybe I forget.
Well, he's no Keanu Reeves.
That's right. If you referred to him, no one would know. No one would know what you're talking about.
Anyway, so it's Diana, Melanie, and then there's also Kathleen, who's Melanie's best friend. And there is Caitlin, who is the uptight one. The uptight but pretty one, mm-hmm. who... Anyway, we all know who Caitlin is, I assume.
Main character, really.
And we also have Maya, who's their other friend, who...
is in a wheelchair.
Is in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she's also a kind of Vula-esque character in that she's often there to kind of bounce things off for the other characters. Like, she never really has a plot line of her own. She's mostly there.
No.
Yeah.
No, they don't give her really much... She has a crush on Yik. That's like a very, it's like a C or a D plot.
And there's also a plot line where the other girls go to the movies without her and because she can't take the streetcar. And then she's upset. That she's like, that really sucks. You could have invited me and I would have found a way to get there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Maya's wearing a really cool outfit. She's got like birds on a dress. So mm-hmm. It's like really big parrots. So this looks,
I want that.
Looks good. Mm-hmm. Other 90s fashions. Like Melanie is hilariously dressed. Like it's she's wearing flower patterned jeans, mm-hmm. which was, that was a thing.
Are they pink or like regular color?
I can't remember. Okay. Yeah, the pink flower patterned jeans. Oh boy, the denim. I remember that really clearly from the time. And I think Caitlin's wearing a leather vest over top of like a short sleeve shirt.
Okay.
With that's, a big floral skirt.
Yeah, that sounds Caitlin. That sounds like Caitlin. And she has that blonde stripe in her hair.
That's right. She's often had that streak.
Which actually affected my life in a very destructive way.
Did you?
I attempted to.
Oh, did you?
Achieve such a stripe.
Did you?
Yeah,
did,
my
did
friend
it work?
And I. No. My friend and I bought this hair dye called Ultra Blondissima.
Okay.
Which is like the strongest hair bleach you can get.
Ultra Blondie. I remember this on the shelves because I dyed my hair blonde when I was in high school.
Right?
That was the one.
I bet it looked good on you.
I got the blondest possible hair dye.
So you had that like skateboarder.
I had like that Eminem haircut.
Yeah, yeah.
With it was blonde.
The like Green Day Eminem.
Yeah, thing. Right. It was earlier than Green Day, I think. But
that was like a skater.
Skater look.
Look.
Yeah.
Like, I was younger.
That. I used that.
That's funny. Well, I mean, also, it was the dye that you used before dyeing your hair with Manic Panic.
Okay.
So you'd, like, bleach the hell out of it, and then you'd put another color on top.
Got it.
But this was, like, I was, like, 12, maybe? So it was my first experience with hair dye of any kind. And my friends and I both did it. We both had like brown hair and we both got this like brassy orange result. Only hers wasn't as bad because Elise, like her hair was straight, so it didn't really change the consistency of her hair.
Oh, your hair straightened?
But it didn't straighten, but it lost all its curl and it just fuzzed.
Oh.
So I had this chunk
that was
for
fuzzy.
A long time that was fuzzy. Just, it was like fried, like completely and utterly fried.
Oh.
And it was orange.
That Caitlin was a bad influence.
Yeah, she was
she
a
thought
bad
she was
influence.
A goody two shoes, always doing the right thing, but.
She ruined
she
my
ruined
hair.
For like a few months, I guess.
At least like maybe a year even.
Oh my.
Yeah.
You should be really angry at her. You should write her a letter. So. The girls are hanging out, having a good time. They're, Melanie's like flipping through a hunky guy calendar that I guess they probably gave to Diana for her birthday. And she looks at it and she says, wow, we could really use some guys like these at Degrassi.
You want some firefighter, adult firefighters in your class?
That'd be a little weird, Melanie. Guys walking around Speedos and stuff. And then they're playing Truth or Dare. Mm-hmm. Oh, and so Kathleen, she's got the joints in her pocket. She's
right.
Like, anybody ever smoke marijuana?
In Truth or Dare.
In Truth or Dare. Yeah. It was a dare.
I guess,
or was it a truth question? Yeah, it would have been like, anyone smell? Yeah. And people say, some people say yes or whatever. So.
I just have to say, that in fact, the problem with this party begins when they start playing Truth or Dare. Start playing Truth or Dare, party's ruined every time. Like, this isn't really an anti-drug episode. It's an anti-Truth or Dare episode.
That's a good way of reading it.
Because that game is It's a killer man.
Like. You know what else is funny about this episode is like they bring out the birthday cake, and all people do is go happy birthday, yay, and nobody sings the birthday song, which you couldn't for copyright reasons.
Really?
Ever sing the birthday song on until recently you couldn't sing it on.
Oh wow,
on
that's
film.
Interesting.
So it's a kind of a weird moment. You're like, that's a weird way to bring out a cake.
Yeah, but that's why.
That's
okay.
Always the way.
They should have like sung it in Greek or something.
Maybe they get you for the tune. Even.
Maybe.
I don't really know. Or whatever the Greek version of birthday song is. Yeah, like the Italian birthday song isn't the same. And yeah. So they're going to smoke marijuana.
Okay.
But Caitlin's not. Yeah. She doesn't want any.
So if I may, Kathleen actually says, anyone ever smoke marijuana? Do you want to?
That's right.
That's how she brings it up. And Melanie is very excited to say yes.
Right.
Right?
We should have an aside quickly about the actress who played Kathleen. Her name's Rebecca Haynes. She became, as an adult, a health policy researcher. Writes about youth drug use. That's her whole thing.
And she was very, like, she became kind of prominent during the legalization of marijuana
right.
debates in Canada.
Right.
Was she before or against it? I'm not sure.
I'm not sure. Yeah. She's a professor at the University of Calgary.
Is she? So she lives here
in Calgary. You might see her around town one
wow.
day. You might see Kathleen around town. Oh Kathleen, if you're listening, I don't know what to say.
We'd like to hang out sometime.
Yeah, we should talk youth drug policy.
We'd like to smoke a joint with you.
Hey, don't
it's legal thanks to her.
Oh, that's maybe. Or
maybe.
Or maybe no thanks to
right,
her.
Right, right,
we don't
right.
really know. She's probably on the liberal side of things, but I okay. that would be my
guess. I think
guess.
She was. I think she was pro legalization.
Okay.
So thank you, Kathleen.
You mean
Rebecca. Okay.
So they move on. They smoke marijuana.
Yes.
Melanie really smokes it a lot. She loves it. She
loves
gets giggly
it.
And chatty.
Which she always is, but this always is even is. Over the top.
It more. Goes with her personality.
Yeah.
Kathleen also, with her personality, gets like uptight, paranoid.
Yeah, she does.
She's like, imagine, you know, you could see she's having a bad trip.
She gets all quiet and she's like.
Kathleen and Caitlin's like, Kathleen, what's wrong? She's like, nothing, looking around nervously.
Yeah.
Clearly paranoid. Diana smokes some, says she doesn't feel anything. Maybe she does, but it's not much. And Maya tries it, but nothing. I don't think anything happens with her.
She says she's tired, I think.
She says she gets tired, right? Okay.
Something like that.
So that's the panoply.
The dynamic.
That's the panoply of marijuana experience.
And then,
at the party.
So Melanie is like being really silly, and everyone else is just kind of like, Melanie.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's kind of the.
Somewhat. But I mean, Diana is still having a good time. It's
yeah.
her birthday party. Truth or Dare game continues. She brings up. Her question is, her
to
truth
Melanie,
question
right?
to Melanie
yeah.
is, have you ever read someone's diary?
Uh-oh.
So I wrote down the...
Can I just say, it's really funny how kids feel like they can't lie in Truth or Dare?
Well, that's the game.
I know, but like, in this case, you should have said no, because we know from a previous episode that she did
yeah.
read poor Kathleen's diary.
It's true. I mean, obviously, tactful lies are like really important in life.
Yeah, I mean, she could just be like, of course not.
But I mean, the game doesn't work, right? It's
yeah.
not any fun if you're not telling the truth.
I know, but like, here we go. This is why this is an anti-truth or dare episode. Okay, so we're going to reenact the episode.
Right, just this little bit of dialogue.
All right.
All right, so Diana says, have you ever read someone's diary?
Yes.
Says Melanie. Whose?
Kathleen's, of course. But it was okay because it came out that she had anorexia and she got counseling.
Then Kathleen interjects, Melanie!
Kathleen!
Sounds just like her.
So then, okay, let me just...
This is a big line. A big line. It's not funny.
Well, she is laughing when she says
it. She's laughing when she says it.
Kathleen, I don't see what the big deal is. You had anorexia, your mom's an alcoholic, and your boyfriend beat you up. Most people would need counseling for even one of those things.
Oh my God, Kathleen is angry. It's not your secret to tell.
And she's more sad than angry.
She's sad.
She's distraught.
She stomps away, cries, starts
mm-hmm.
crying. All right, so Melanie delivers the line laughing. It's like a crazy...
And then she keeps laughing after. She's like, uh-oh.
It's just really... It is so... It is very awkward, like...
That was a pretty good acting.
It was.
On Kathleen's part. On Melanie's part. She really seemed high.
She pulled it off. Yeah, she did seem high.
Yeah.
That line. She had to deliver that whole long line with Kathleen's entire life in the line. So it's kind of a famous.
I wish I had done it better because I don't know if I did it justice.
Oh, I think you did great. You did great.
The way she says it is so great.
I think you did really well with that. And so this kind of like ruins their relationship as far as we know. I mean, the lesson is, kids, don't do drugs because it's going to like strain your relationships with your friends. Like, by contrast, the boys, they don't do any drugs. They just play.
They don't play truth or dare.
They don't play truth or dare. They tell ghost stories to each other and they try to scare each other. Mostly, they're just like playing. They're playing poker
for
wholesome game of poker. Never hurt anyone. nickels and dimes and stuff. Yep. And Arthur is the big surprise is that Arthur is a great poker player.
Yeah, and then the other guys respect him.
They respect him after that. So you see, their night out bonded them.
Yeah.
Right. But
that's right. The girls' night out split them.
Split them up, and we don't. I'm not sure if we really see Kathleen and Melanie have a storyline ever again.
Jeez Louise.
So the final scene is like Kathleen, Melanie on Monday morning is like severe, like very contrite, and goes to Kathleen and says, I'm really, really sorry. And then Kathleen slams her locker and says, so am I, and turns away. And I'm not sure if we see them talk again. Mm-hmm, maybe I'm wrong there, but from my recollection, I think that's the end of their story.
Yikes.
Yeah. So that's I don't know, it seems like a classic Degrassi episode. You got everything going on there.
So let me ask you a question. Like, we have at least, if it's an anti-drug episode, more than an anti-truth or dare episode,
if it's
possible.
I don't know. I like your reading. I like your reading of it, that it's an anti-truth or dare.
Yeah. I mean, we also have the much more dramatic anti-drug episode sequence.
Yeah.
Wherein Shane earlier in the series takes a hit of acid at LSD at a concert with Luke, who's taken it lots of times before we hear. And they get separated after the show, and Shane goes wandering around Toronto, and he falls off a bridge. Jumps off a bridge, or maybe. We don't know how he got off the bridge.
I don't think we know. Yeah.
But he's found under it, practically dead. When he wakes up, he's like brain damaged and changed for life.
Yeah, and he's barely in the show again. He shows up once or twice.
Yeah.
Two more times with very small storylines.
So, yeah. I mean, that is a very serious consequence of taking a drug.
Yeah, so compared to
which
that.
Which is worse? Which is worse? The end of Kathleen and Melanie's friendship, or Shane?
Well, obviously, this is not a deep question. It's clear which one is worse. They seem to be lightening up a little bit.
Well, also, it's not LSD; it is just marijuana.
Right. Yeah. You can tell by the severity of the consequences, like what drug is supposed to be worse, right?
Yeah.
So,
I mean, LSD was also in an after school special, right?
Was it?
Helen Hunt, famously.
Oh, was it?
She jumped out the window.
Oh, that's like a standard. Oh, wow. So we're like at the end of the series now, more or less.
Mm.
1 year after the main show ended, though, there was kind of a surprise 90-minute television special called School's Out.
Very exciting.
Broadcast, I think it was the summer of 92. It's like about the kids in their final summer after school before they split up to go to university. They kind of do what The Sopranos did, which is like, you know, The Sopranos ending is like, just like fans hated it because there's no closure.
Yeah.
I guess you'd say it was unexpected, the fade to black and Sopranos. Like, there's a little bit of that vibe to the way this ends because it's like a very sad ending, really, for the most
part.
Very
sad.
And so I kind of respect that they did that with Degrassi, where they're just like, yeah, there's going to be sad stuff happening. And it's like, not, you know, and it's kind of like that in a way for high school, because when high school's over, that is kind of the end of a world, you know.
Yeah.
It's your social world is really, really going to radically change, and so you get that kind of sad summer vibe from it.
Definitely.
So I kind of thought that was true to life.
So Alexa and Simon get married. That's kind of the thread that holds it all together.
There's a wedding at the end.
And, like, through the whole thing, they're planning it. So that's what ends up, like, bringing the kids back together a little bit after university
I think
starts.
Maybe in second semester or something. Yeah. That's the very, very final scene is there.
I think it's
wedding.
Actually supposed to be October.
Oh, just literally a month later.
Yeah. I think because they keep saying we're getting married in October.
Right. It's like a month later. Okay.
Yeah.
So we were talking about Wheels earlier. They give Wheels like, the worst ending possible. He's a problem drinker. You think that he might have an escape route because, as I said, he's like a good mechanic, auto mechanic. He gets a car. He's going to drive to Calgary, but instead he gets drunk at the cottage party. Is driving angrily or something.
Why did you explain the cottage party?
It's a post-grad last hurrah party at a cottage. So all the characters. Well, again, I don't remember Kathleen and Melanie.
They're not there.
They're not even in this episode at all, are they? I don't recall them being there at all. So, all you need to know about Wheels is that he drives drunk and, like, kills a baby. They actually show a baby's limp body being pulled from a car, like a little kid.
Yeah.
Lucy's in the car with him and is, like, horribly injured and maimed as well.
Yeah.
And so, and Wheels goes to jail.
Yeah, prison forever. Not forever.
No, I mean, he comes, I don't know, several years.
But we know that he's going
to his life is ruined. I mean, as he's ruined other people's lives, too.
Lucy's life is ruined as far as we know.
Yeah, so, like, the tragic working class character, like, the story is complete, there.
But Lucy is really out of nowhere, because she was, like, the one with all the potential.
That's right. Her bright future as a university, going professional class, high achiever, and all that. That's all ruined, right? So, what else happens in this famous episode?
Well,
this famous special?
Very famously, there's the love triangle between Joey Jeremiah, Caitlin, his longtime girlfriend, and Tessa Campanelli, the year younger kind of party girl, I guess is how we're supposed to see
her. She's a year younger, right?
Yeah.
We're supposed to see her as a party girl.
I think so.
I don't like that portrayal of Italian Canadians, but...
That we're supposed to be less sympathetic to her, because, like, to me, she's way more likable, relatable, and sympathetic than Caitlin.
Yeah, I would agree, and I'm not sure the show is judging her that much.
No?
I'm not sure the show is.
Yeah, I mean, not too much, but, I mean, we're definitely supposed to be on Caitlin's side, if there's a side to be had.
Right. With this 1992 special, apparently it was the first time that the F word was said on the CBC. It's said in the context of discussing Tessa Campanella. Snake is angry with Joey at the cottage party. Snake says this. He says, "Let's recap the Joey Jeremiah summer, shall we?" says Snake. Joey Jeremiah spends his summer dating Caitlin and fucking Tessa Campanelli.
And who overhears but Caitlin.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, no.
So that was the first F word uttered on the CBC.
Well done, Snake. Well done. And then Caitlin says it.
Yes, I think it's said once or twice.
Yeah, then she says, "You..." And then she I can't say it.
And our parents are watching this.
Yeah.
So,
well, potentially.
Probably. So that's the end of the Degrassi run. I mean, what else? Anything else you want to say in that show happened? Not really.
Really, the love triangle and the drunk driving are all one remember.
Right. What we find out later, because of the next generation, what we know is that Joey is going to become a car salesman.
Right. He's going to get married, have a kid, his wife dies.
His wife dies before the new series begins. And Snake is going to become principal eventually of Degrassi School.
But wait a minute. Was it which episode was it where Don McKellar showed up as Caitlin's boyfriend?
That was one of that was like the second or third episode
of the
Next Generation from like 2002.
Because that was hilarious.
That was
perfect casting.
We're going to leave Next Generation for another episode maybe one day, okay? There's a lot more to be said there about it.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. So the show, it had a long tale of popularity.
Yeah.
Of course, it had been shown in 40 countries and it was syndicated for a long, long time. So there was like basically another cohort or two of high school kids and junior high and stuff kids who watched Degrassi after school. It was on after school and stuff. And I remember being on a lot. So the show ended up making a lot of money in all those years in syndication and stuff.
And it was very popular in Australia, I hear, the originals.
Yeah, well, so Sarah Ballingall, this is a sad story.
Melanie.
She stopped acting partly because she was like brutally harassed by a
stalked
an Australian man. I guess, right?
Isn't that,
he was an Australian.
Yeah, he was Australian.
So the show had a lot. Yes, the show was very popular with Australian stalkers.
Well,
it's very sad. Very sad story. So, the actors, you know, once they stepped off the set that final day, they never saw another cent, right? So
that's
it didn't
crazy.
Really, it didn't really matter how popular the show ended up being and how long it ran.
That is so crazy.
So they never got it paid again. And so that was not typical of a super successful show. If you had star
they should
actors,
all be like rolling in
they
cash.
Would all, you'd think they'd all be comfortable the rest of their lives.
I guess so.
Some of the actors, they moved to Hollywood for a while and, you know, tried to have your typical actor's career there. They had some bit parts over the years. Stacey Mitzen, Pat Mastroianni, they both did that. But they ended up coming back to Canada eventually and kind of, you know, working in Canadian film and television a bit more. Bill Parrott, who plays Shane, he still seems to act quite a bit. He gets like a lot of roles in those endless number of like cop shows.
He's
always a cop.
Oh, okay.
He, as an older man, he looks like a decent cop or whatever. So, others, others use Degrassi as like a way into the, industry, like, you know, behind the scenes.
Right.
So for example, Darren Brown, who played Dwayne, a character we haven't mentioned, very famous plotline. He gets HIV.
From a girl.
From a girl. He gets HIV from a girl. And then Joey and him have this epic battle in the bathroom where Dwayne is bleeding. And it's just like, it's again, it's like the, you know, you'll be learning about the dangers, but also how not to ostracize people with HIV and stuff. And I think that's like a pretty, that was a very prominent storyline and an important message too. And so the guy who played Dwayne, he's currently an assistant director on big Hollywood productions in Toronto. So he's like, for example, like the assistant director to M. Night Shyamalan. How do you say his name? Shyamalan?
I'm sorry.
I could be wrong. Sorry if I mispronounced that. Also like Will Smith's like Bad Boys 3 or whatever, and other Will Smith movies that shot in Canada. Like he's the like the second unit director.
Oh, interesting.
So he's got a pretty good job working in the industry. And we already mentioned that Snake, Stefan Brogren, is like, he had a long tenure as like a small role in the Degrassi, The Next Generation, which ran for like 15 years or whatever. I'll mention a bit more of that in a second. Now, the really like the saddest story of post-Degrassi years is, well, the guy who in the show had the saddest story. It's Neil Hope, who played Wheels. After Degrassi, you know, Neil Hope struggled. He like basically his, you know, didn't go to university. His first jobs after the show were working at Money Mart, you know, or Pizza Pizza. He was he had
Have been rich from all that airtime.
You'd think he would at least be comfortable, but no, like nobody had money left over from Degrassi, right? So in
sucks.
In 1994, he was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes. This was a condition aggravated by his problem drinking. Now, we need to know about, I don't think we mentioned this, is that like the show, like it, so Neil Hope's father died when he was a young man working on Degrassi. And shortly thereafter, the writers on Degrassi worked that into Wheels' storyline and made it so, and Wheels or Neil Hope would talk about this openly like in interviews and stuff, but how he was like asked to use his like pain
to
perform the role of a boy who lost his parents, because in real life
it really happened to him. Wow.
And that was like considered like therapeutic for him. He would talk about it as, oh, this is something I wanted to do, it helps me work through it or whatever. I guess that's how other people would see it too, somewhat. Okay. You know, we have this discourse now about airing all of your public grievances, all your personal traumas and grievances publicly, and how helpful is that really?
Well, it sounds like it didn't help Neil Hope.
Well, I'm
not,
I mean, I don't want to come to conclusions on this, but like what you see is like life imitating art in a lot of ways. I mean, there seems to be this kind of cycle between the two about life and art. So the real life Neil Hope was homeless. He couch surfed. He stayed in shelters. And this was really much like we had seen.
After the show ended.
After the real life Neil Hope, that was his life. In Degrassi, that's happening to him. In one of the later episodes, Wheels is out on the street because his grandmother's kicked him out. He calls his grandmother, asks if he can come back, and she tells him to go stay in a shelter.
Right.
And he says, those are for bums and losers.
And so that ended up happening to the actor.
That happened to the actor.
Wow.
The last time we see Neil Hope on camera, it was a short 2005 interview. And it was actually Stefan Brogren who is like conducting an interview with Degrassi character people. Oh, I should say, Neil Hope, like as Wheels, has like a bit role or two on the new Degrassi years later. He's out of jail now. Mm-hmm. And he says hi to the boys or whatever. Neil Hope, in his real Neil Hope, lived in Hamilton in his final days. He wore an eye patch. Apparently he was speaking incoherently. These could be side effects of diabetes.
Oh, no.
In 2007, he died of a heart attack.
How old was he?
Like 35.
Oh my God.
Is that right? Something like that? In his 30s.
Yeah.
I believe. He was in his apartment alone and wasn't found until a week later. And apparently he had lost contact with his family.
Oh
so his family did not find out until 5 years later.
Five years later.
And it was in the press. There was a story. There was a very a well-researched and obituary, essentially, written, published in the Toronto Star. But 5 years after he died,
in
2012.
It's horrible.
Yeah. So
you wouldn't think that someone who was famous, it feels counterintuitive that someone so well known, they could just disappear and be lost.
You know, it is kind of impossible not to notice how closely his life followed the script that the show laid out for him. His friends and family would call him, as a joke, Niels, a play on Wheels. Neil, his real name plus Wheels, right? Because of his similarities to the character. You know, on the show, they borrowed from Neil Hope's real life.
Yeah.
Were they exploiting a vulnerable young man? Or were the showrunners, trying to kind of teach him something in a way?
They're trying to teach the viewers something.
Certainly the
viewers. It's ironic that it ended up being at his, not maybe at his expense, but at least it didn't help him.
Right. Yeah. So that's the saddest kind of post.
That is really sad.
Just to give in context, what it means not having any kind of money from the show.
Yeah.
It's Pat Mastriani. He goes into the family business. I think his parents own a construction business or something. So he ends up kind of quitting acting and doing that. Then now he has a very respectable career going around to comic cons and giving talks, and they're very good. There's a lot of them on YouTube. I recommend any kind of fan who wants to hear behind the scenes stories, watch some of those videos.
Basically still talking about Degrassi, the rest of his life is kind of about Degrassi.
So back in 2001, he was getting married, and so he threw a stag and doe party. This is Pat Mastriani. He advertised it publicly and in the press and said that you could come meet Degrassi actors. And so there all these Degrassi fans showed up at this bar. They paid $40 to get in. Apparently Yik was the doorman taking the money. I guess Yik, I've forgotten the actor's name, but they're very good friends. He's very good friends with Pat Mastriani. Yeah, so everyone paid $40 to come in, and then they could get autographs and chat and stuff. And I guess Joey or Pat Mastriani was had a table set up selling merch.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
So he's always been on a bit of a small businessman kind of hustle to make something out of the legacy
of
the show.
It's so funny how that vibes with the Joey Jeremiah character.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
A hustler in a way.
Yeah.
And I really learned a lot about the show from those talks that Pat Mastriani and Stacey Mitzen and Stefan Brogren, Snake as well, have been doing.
Okay.
But it is primarily Pat Mastriani and Stacey Mitzen doing these events, and they're doing them this summer. You could probably see them somewhere at a Comic-Con somewhere in Canada. The producers of Degrassi, now Kit Hood and Linda Schuyler. So they, after this big success, they could do almost whatever they wanted on the CBC, right? So they produced another CBC series in 1995. It was called The Liberty Street. It ran for 2 seasons, 26 episodes. It was set in a apartment complex, an apartment building. It had a couple of Degrassi actors on it, like Pat Mastriani. Clearly, this is intended to be Melrose Place, which was a hit at the time. Mm-hmm. They were trying to we're going to grow up with our audience.
So Melrose Place was set in LA or something?
Yeah. And it was like there was a crossover with 90210.
Oh.
So that when 90210 was ending, they were like,
this is them as grown-ups.
This, it's not them, because I don't, there
this,
might,
okay, so
there
might have world.
Been, there was like okay. one, maybe, I don't know, I can't speak that much about Melrose Place, but I think there was one character who crossed over to the new show
yeah.
in a new place, a new space. That's what they were trying to do somewhat with oh. Liberty Street. It was going to be a more adult melodrama okay. kind of show, the way
in
Melrose
Toronto.
Place, in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't that good. I watched a couple episodes, like, this isn't really working. Mm-hmm. They got two seasons out of that. Now, Kit Hood and Linda Schuyler, they divorce. I believe it's like around the time of Liberty Street. They're getting divorced. Linda Schuyler goes on with the head writer from Degrassi. His name was Ian Moore. He wrote most of the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very good writer. They produced a show called Riverdale. This was like a 1997 to 2000. This was a sort of soap opera set in the neighborhood of Toronto, like Riverdale neighborhood. I've never seen it. It ran for, had two seasons, I think. So the next couple attempts at a show aren't really hitting. I mean, she's still, I guess they're still probably making plenty of money. With her second husband, his name's Stephen Stone, Linda Schuyler went on to produce Degrassi, The Next Generation, which ran for 14 seasons
wow.
from 2001 to 2015. Then they had another two-year stint on a new network. The Degrassi Next Generation was not on CBC, it was on CTV.
Oh, okay.
Then there was like Degrassi, The Next Class. That I don't know what network that was on. That was from, they had two more seasons of that show. So they've like stuck together another 16 seasons of Degrassi content. I think, I don't know. I think that's pretty much it.
Wow.
I don't really have anything else to say about Degrassi Junior High and Degrassi High. It was a lot of fun rewatching them.
It sure was.
And learning about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the economics behind the show. That stuff, for some reason, that stuff is interesting
oh,
to me.
Oh, it's very interesting, and it's very like distressing as well.
It is somewhat distressing,
yeah.
isn't it?
Yeah, especially the part about Wheels, like Neil Hope ending up penniless and ultimately dead, when he should have at least had enough money to like have the resources to get the help he needed.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
One last thing about, oh yeah, so Pat Mastriani, who's big in the comic cons, he in 2019 put together something he called Degrassi Palooza. And it was a mega convention where everybody who he could gather from the show, all actors and bit players, and he brought Kit Hood. Kit Hood has recently died, but this was like the last, I think, public event that Kit Hood participated in. And it was like, there's some video out there you can see of it.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently the owners of the Degrassi trademark, like, told him to take the name off of it because they didn't approve of this Degrassi Palooza he was
doing.
I don't know who the current owners of the Degrassi trademark are, but they are launching a new Degrassi series on HBO next year.
Ah!
The original producers, like Linda Schuyler, Stephen Stone, like they're not involved.
Okay.
I think they're most.
It's just like a new generation of Degrassi. Can't wait.
Probably won't watch it. We probably won't.
Oh, I just thought I should say that.
Or maybe we will if we do an episode about it at some point.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't want to watch all of it.
No. Well, if we do it early, there won't be that many episodes.
Okay.
Also, it could be good for all we know. For all
it's
we know.
It's gonna be about kids in high school.
I know. It is kind of weird. I mean, to watch a show like that. But I mean, like, you know, final thoughts on Degrassi. It was a lot of fun rewatching it because it's obviously
nostalgic.
It's just like super nostalgic. Yeah. So many memories attached to the characters.
It's like they were our friends, right?
Yeah, and like you just, some of those plot lines, they're so traumatic. They're like burned into my memory.
Totally.
So I'm glad we revisited it.
Yeah, yeah. And like the fact that I related so hard to Melanie that I couldn't stand her. Now seeing her, I'm like, she's not so bad. Maybe
she's
that
nice.
Means I wasn't so bad.
Well, she's one of my favorite characters
she's
on
cute,
the show.
Right?
She's a nice character. There's nothing wrong with her at all.
I mean, she's a little bit uncouth, shall we say. She doesn't have grace.
I think she's great. She's okay. funny.
Well, yay, Melanie.
I'm She's funny and exuberant.
I'm sorry that actress quit acting. That's really sad.
It's a very sad story, too.
Yeah, and Rebecca, who played Kathleen, if you're in our city, we'd love to hang out anytime.
don't seem too desperate.
we would hang out with you, but we don't need to.
Okay, I would say hi. I would go, oh, yeah, hey. I would say hello if I saw her somewhere.
Would you? Because that might be annoying to her.
Yeah, maybe I wouldn't even do that.
I think if she wants to be friends, she should make the
first
move.
It's more annoying to like very briefly say, hi, oh, I remember you. That's it. And then move on. That's more annoying than trying to be friends with somebody.
Well, if we don't get along, we don't have to be friends. We could just hang out once and see. Maybe we could reenact that scene together. Okay. I could be Melanie.
I'm sure that's really high on her list.
I'm sure it's very annoying to be known as the character that you played as a child.
Okay, I think that's it.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for teaching me about Degrassi.
Thanks for sharing your memories about it too. And we'll see you next time.